1906, February the 14th. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. We have four items on the agenda, and present for the record are Senators Bundy, French, Stevens, and myself, McGuire. First up, we have House Bill 101 back before us again. And the bill's representative, sponsor's representative is here.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, Rick Vanderkolk, staff to Rep. Gatto. Per the committee's request last Tuesday, there is a new version before you, M as in Michael. And Mr. Luckup was, which council was requested to make some changes to tighten up the language a bit. Those changes are on page 1, line 13, in section 2. When a person is convicted under A of this section, the court shall determine by a preponderance of the evidence. If, as determined by a chemical test taken within 4 hours after the offense was committed. And then he did substitute the phrase for each, where on the second page, you'll notice there, just to make it more precise.
Okay.
There's also testimony, written testimony brief by Mr. John McConaughey, Deputy Municipal Attorney for the Criminal Division and Municipality of Anchorage. He might be online right now also to answer questions, but he indicates in there in your packet that these amendments satisfy his concerns.
Okay. Mr. McConaughey, are you online? Okay. So does everyone have the printed copy of his testimony?
Yes.
Do you have it? Okay. Okay, so we'll put that into the record. Are there any further comments from the committee on version M? Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the changes made in the language. I think it's exactly what I had in mind. It's just my only concern is that it now reads, when you get to the end of that long sort of when clause, you have a what I think is sort of a clunky grammatical moment, if you will, and it occurs on line 8 of page 2. If you kind of read through the way it reads, it says, when a person is convicted, the court shall determine if, as determined by a test taken within 4 hours, there was a certain amount of alcohol in the person's blood. Then there's a comma, and it just sort of lurches into this phrase, the court shall require, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just wondering whether it wouldn't read better or make more sense to have something like the phrase, having made that determination on line 8, so that the phrase would read, having made that determination, the court shall require the person. And so that's an offering I'm making to the committee for its consideration, and maybe I should just be more formal about it and say I'll offer an amendment to that line and page, the amendment being, having made that determination, those words to appear after the word breath and before the word the on line 8.
Okay. Is there an objection to that? I can see it both ways. What we could do is put it in. Luckup's not here, correct?
Correct. He's meeting deadline now.
You know, sometimes drafting has ways of doing things, but I see your point. I don't have an objection.
We can put it in as a conceptual amendment,
yeah,
with those words, and if the, okay, the drafters have some overarching issue with it, I'd
yeah,
be willing to,
as it moves on,
you know, reconsider it, I guess. And I guess, and the same phrase would appear on line 15 as well. It's the same yeah, grammatical construction. The having made that determination phrase would appear after the word breath and before the word the on line 15 of page 2.
Okay, so that's the amendment conceptually. Is there any objection, Senator Bundy? Any? Okay, so hearing and seeing no objection, the amendment carries. That brings version M amended before us. Is there a motion? Senator Bundy.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that we pass from State Affairs Committee, CS for House Bill 101 as amended, conceptually at least, and attach this one up.
Okay, is there
recommendation?
and individual recommendations. Any objection to that motion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, House Bill 101 moves. Thank you very much for your hard work.
Thank you.
In responding to the committee. Okay, next up we have the lovely matter of SCR 15. And the bill's sponsor sitting right to my left. Tell us about this fabulous concurrent resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I'd like Tim Lampkin to come forward. He's been dealing with this bill, and have him present it if you.
Mr. Lampkin, welcome to Senate State Affairs.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Thank you for hearing this bill. I'll be brief. This bill or resolution is in front of you at the behest of the Joint Legislative Education Task Force. It was its first and immediate recommendation for this session. It establishes a standing committee on education. It calls for a recurring review of the funding formula, regular updates of the district cost factors, review of programs and policies within the Department of Education and Early Development, and review of programs and policies of the University of Alaska. Many feel that considering our constitutional obligation, it's fitting for education to have its own standing committee. And oftentimes when the legislature considers legislation, we look at what other states are doing. And I would point your attention to a spreadsheet that should be in your packets that's titled Standing Education Committees Among States. It was curious to find out that Alaska is one of only three, or perhaps two, considering how you look at it, three states of the union that do not have a standalone education committee. With that, I stand by to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, questions for Mr. Lampkin, or members.
Sure, Madam Chair, if I could make.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
It became clear to me when I was first elected to the legislature that. It would be reasonable for us to have an education committee. When I was in the House, Senator Bundy chaired a special committee on education. We've had a special committee on education here in the Senate, and so I think it works well. The chairwoman of our HES committee, Senator Davis, is very supportive, and that's been one of the issues in the past that the HES committee wants. As often in the past, I would keep health, education, and social services all in one committee. And so Senator Davis is quite happy with this moving in the direction of having a standing committee on education. The last issue I wanted to mention is the university. I think it seems to me that over the years, the university has mainly responded to the finance committee. And that certainly is valid. I mean, because a lot of issues deal with finance. But that means that it really has gotten sort of short shrift, I think, over the years in hearing issues more regarding programs in the university. So this would set up a special committee, a standing committee, which really deals with both K through 12 and university, and I'd urge you to consider it.
Okay, Green has joined us. Questions or comments on the resolution? Okay, hearing and seeing none, thank you, Mr. Lampkin. We do have three people here in the audience that wish to testify, and the first is Carl Rose. We know you, but if you'd put yourself on the record and.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Madam Chairman, I think my comments will be brief. I would like to say that I had the opportunity to serve on the Education Task Force this summer. It was something new in my experience. I've never seen or been part of an opportunity where you take a broad number of issues and we're able to focus and hear from the public and come up with some consensus issues, and it's all before you now. What I want to talk to you about right now is the recommendation to take a look at a standing committee on education. As we found out this summer, education, at least K-12 education, which is mostly what we dealt with, is really quite complicated. And in the course of a legislative session, in many committees, people will have 3 minutes to 5 minutes to testify. Excuse me. And it's really difficult to get any kind of congruence in a conversation about some of the complicated aspects of K-12 education. We'll expend $1 billion a year in K-12, and we have a number of issues that come before us. And I think that when the task force had an opportunity to discuss these issues, we saw that there were some things that we could readily identify and work on, and there were other things that were really quite complicated that needed more time. Just as an example, people wanted to take a look at the makeup of the 20% block grant, and most people in this room may not know what that means, but it's 20% of your allotment that goes to special education, vocational education, and bilingual. And what happens is, how is that distributed? How is it affecting us? Those are conversations that is very, very difficult to deal with in a committee, and even to the broader context, to have 60 legislators have an opportunity to view that. What it requires is some time, as well as issues of maybe intervention on the No Child Left Behind, reconstitution of governance and schools. You look at the mandated nature legislation that may be regulations that we face, the local, the state, and the federal role in education. These things become very, very complicated. It's our hope, and it was the hope of the task force, that we would be able to create a standing committee who could deal with these issues and give it the due diligence that they require to be able to make better decisions on behalf of the body. And so I think I'll hold my comments there. This is an effort to try to give you the time you need to make better decisions, and I hope you'd look favorably on this piece of legislation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rose. Questions? Comments? Thank you for your testimony. Okay, next we have Richard Luther. Mr. Luther? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Richard Luther. I'm legislative liaison for the Department of Education. I also will keep my comments very brief. The department, as well as the administration, support the establishment of this special committee. I think some of the comments made before the hearings held on the funding bill brought forth by the committee identified some of the reasons that we support it. There are a number of major issues that were not dealt with because of time by the task force that was appointed by the governor. Some of the issues that are unresolved at this time but do require discussion and probably quite a bit of time are charter and correspondence schools, special needs block grants, vocational and technical programs, required local effort, and then the whole issue of pre-K education. These are major issues that will require quite a bit of time, and it's quite likely that having a special committee will provide more time to discuss these. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Luther. Questions? Okay, hearing and seeing none, thank you. John Alcantara. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is John Alcantara. Serves Government Relations Director for 13,000 public school employees of NEA Alaska. NEA Alaska also supports SCR 15 and creating an education standing committee. I agree with the comments made by Mr. Rose, and not only Mr. Rose, Senator Stevens, you spent anywhere from 8 to 10 full days this past summer. Many of you were in the audience also that weren't on the education task force, and it was the first time that education had ample time to go through issues, and has been attested to already, all of them were not addressed in those full days. The Senate this year has a special committee on education chaired by Senator Stevens, and it's been doing good work, but it's, you know, shoehorned into a one-hour time frame with members that have to, you know, head off to Senate Finance and do other things. I think by making it a standing committee and elevating not just the K-12 budget but the university budget, as previously mentioned, will certainly help. And NEA Alaska members, for, you know, we just had our 52nd annual delegate assembly at the end of January, and for years since the late 70s they've been passing policy to try to get a standing committee on education. So I'm glad to see the task force added this to their plate, and we're certainly happy to see it move this far forward, and look forward to seeing a standing committee in the 26th Alaska legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alcantara. Questions? Okay. Seeing and hearing none, thank you. Kiki Abrahamson, did I get it right, Kiki? Is online from Homer.
Yes, you did a great job. Thanks a lot. I just wanted to let you know that I represent Fire Reed Academy, which is a small charter school of under 150. We've been in existence for 11 years, and we've just been doing a great job with an alternative and innovation curriculum. I am here with six of my students. I have been bringing them to all the LIO hearings, and we're very close to the LIO from the school, and so I've got six of my students here with me this morning, and they join me in hoping that you will support SCR and establish a standing education committee. I know I can't speak for them because they're my captive audience, but as speaking for the Fireweed community, and actually all educators and all people in the community are very much in favor of having a separate education committee so that we can deal with these issues that are so critical to the future of Alaska and our young people. And I want to close by thanking you so much for all your work and putting Alaskans' kids first. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, and a warm welcome from the Senate State Affairs Committee to your students. We're glad to see them getting involved in their government. Okay, anyone else here in the audience that wishes to testify on SCR 15? Anyone online? Hearing and seeing none, that closes public testimony and brings the resolution back before us for committee discussion. The only comment I have is, or question I guess, would be Senator Stevens, then in the Senate, for example, then would it go to just simply the Health and Social Services Committee? Is there anything that we need to do with respect to changes to that? I wouldn't see a need or a reason to keep HESS if we had a standing committee on education.
Well, exactly right, Madam Chair. And if you look on page one, line 12, the HESS committee has been changed to Health and Social Services, and both Department of Education and University have been taken out of its responsibility.
Perfect. So we will have a Health and Social Services Committee and then an Education Committee. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm a little bit confused about the structure of the resolution. There's a section one that refers to Rule 20A, and section two refers to the same Rule 20A, amending them both, and it's just not clear to me why we're making two amendments to the same section.
Tim, can you? Mr. Lampkin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. If you'll notice on the effective date on page, I believe it's page three, there was an amendment in the special education committee that effectively sunsetted the committee in, I believe it's 2013.
So I think I understand what you're saying. You're saying that Section 1 would take effect immediately.
Correct.
Section 2 would take effect on the first regular session, the 28th. We're in the 26th legislature?
I believe that would be January of 2013, perhaps 12, if my math is off.
Okay.
Is that what you intended, Senator Stevens?
2013. So sunsets the education committee.
Exactly.
That, now I get it. Okay.
That was the intention of the prior committee, that it be sunsetted.
So we go back to the way it is now.
Right.
That's why the language.
Right.
I understand.
And as I think about it, I mean, I wasn't real excited about putting a sunset on it, but frankly, maybe it makes sense. And by 2013, we can see if it's working or not, and if it should continue or not, and that's the time to decide.
Okay. Senator Bundy.
I notice we have a CS here.
Yes.
Adopted that, or are you working from that?
No. I think what we have before us, I think it's, we could make a motion to adopt it, to have it before us.
I would move that we use our working document, CS, for Senate Concurrent Resolution 15. It's / Charlie.
Okay. Is there an objection to that motion? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, that it is before us. Is there a motion to...
I have
a comment. Senator Green.
I'm the only person in Alaska, I think, that kind of questions this bill, and that's only because of, in the process of committee appointments, another standing committee is very difficult for the Senate. It's not so in the House. But in the Senate, we have enough difficulty now with our standing committees to get members who are not conflicted on other standing committees. And that's why the special committee, which can meet every day if it chooses to handle business on education, we could more clearly outline with our special committee that all legislation will be forwarded to it and it will be responsible for all education issues. I really see another standing committee in the Senate as very troublesome. And I probably wouldn't have thought that a couple of 3 years ago. But knowing the difficulty in the scheduling and filling all the committees we fill with as many members as we do, it's next impossible.
It is hard. Senator French.
This is a concern that's related to that, I think that Senator Green's brought up a great point. I mean, we're all sort of stressed schedule-wise, you know, and you can see the difficulty in getting quorums and with a 90-day session in the crush of work. I think it's worth at least having the discussion here in the committee that it would be my hope, and I would imagine it would be your hope as well, that this committee not result in extra referrals, that we wind up with the same number of bill referrals now.
Yeah.
Or in the future as we have now, that is, we're not just going to simply add, you know, an education committee referral onto bills that deal with education. That's something that's going to have to drop off so that there's not a net sort of increase in committee work. It should be the same amount of committee work, just redistributed. And if we do it right, then you should be creating some time from a reduced workload in other committees that can then be absorbed by the education committee. At least that would be my hope, and I think it's at least worth putting on the record that, you know, we're not trying to multiply the amount of work we do. We're just trying to do it more compartmentalized and more efficiently.
Yeah, it is. I try to convince my House colleagues that it's a lot harder over here.
Absolutely.
And there's that perception that maybe life is a bit easier in the Senate, but you really are stretched with 20 members. And the other concern I just want to put on the record or comment is I hope that the issue of health and social services attracts enough folks as well in their interests. And sometimes I've wondered if it's, you know, one or two that are interested in that, but generally people are interested in education, and it is a popular issue, Senator Stevens, so I think it's worthy of the discussion. But health and social services can be tough because there's never enough money to go around, and it can be a difficult issue. So the sunset, I think, perhaps addresses that. If we got to a point where we didn't have enough members wanting to just focus on the health and social services issues. Senator Bundy.
You addressed my views. Thank you.
Any further comments? Okay, is there a motion?
No.
Well, going on to the next bill.
He is the rules chairman.
Oh.
Let me, on behalf of the rules chair.
And he was defeated yesterday.
CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution number 15 from committee with attached to fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, is there an objection? Okay, hearing and seeing none. CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution number 15 is on to the Senate President's desk.
That's why that little candy was on your...
No, I could tell.
He was very specific about the candy. Okay, so some people have wondered why I have the two bills up on the same day, the next two bills. And the reason that I do, and I want to hear from Senator Wilikowski, so if you want to come up on deck on Senate Bill 202, is that Senator Huggins' bill, and I hope I'm not violating Mason's right now. I'm giving myself a little bit of prerogative as the chair to talk about two bills paralleling one another. Senate Bill 215, the matter of Senator Huggins' bill, has passed before. It is not a new concept, and I think, frankly, the concerns that surround it center on Real ID. I have not heard a tremendous amount of concern about the baseline issue itself. The testimony that we heard in committee last week and that we have heard from folks is that this could in some way be setting us up to backdoor into the Real ID mandates the federal government imposes without perhaps the the privacy concerns addressed on the part of some. So to me, it seemed logical that we would bring up Senate Bill 202, which is something many other states have done in the process of enhancing their driver's licenses. And Washington State is the best example I can point to. They have allowed for an enhancement on their driver's license that requires proof of citizenship and documentation. However, at the same time, they have made it very explicit in their statutes that the state will not accept the federal government's Real ID mandate until privacy concerns and other matters are addressed. So to me, I thought that it was logical to bring Senate Bill 202 up and have that conversation. So, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk to you today about Real ID. And I guess I'll address some of the questions if you have towards the end of what I'm talking about. I came to talk about Real ID and my bill, which would ban state funding for Real ID. And basically, a little history on Real ID. It was put into law in May of 2005 as part of an emergency appropriation bill for the war on Iraq, and also it was right after Hurricane Katrina. So there was a required bill. It was a large bill. It was a must-pass bill. Real ID on the Senate side received no committee referrals. It was not debated on the floor, and so there was very little discussion on it. It was something that was tucked in, and I think, quite frankly, a lot of people didn't notice it. I want to talk about some of the concerns that people have over Real ID, and I know you've all heard about it. You've probably gotten emails, calls about it, but I want to talk about specifically what the law does, because I think it's a law that most Alaskans, or many Alaskans anyway, probably don't support or have serious concerns over. What Real ID does is it requires the creation of the nation's first identification card system. We have passports, but this would require every American citizen to carry a card that is approved by the United States government so that they could fly and so that they could enter any federal buildings. The specific definition in the statute says that it defines what you have to use your Real ID for, and it talks about it in the terms of official purpose. In order to access any federal facility in the United States, you would need your national ID card. In order to enter the IRS, in order to enter a federal courthouse, to enter a national park, you would need your ID card. There are already bills that congressmen have started to propose, which would extend reasons for which you would need your ID card. And since Alaska has about 70% of its land under federal control, this is obviously a concern for Alaskans accessing our national parks and other areas controlled by the federal government. There's no reason to assume that anything that the federal government funds, whether it be hospitals or whether it be Amtrak or buses, you would not have to show your identification card. Which leads us to the next item of concern in the Real ID legislation, and that is in Section 202, which requires a, quote, common machine-readable technology with defined minimum data elements. Basically, what the federal government is doing is it's setting up a system where you can, they will take your card, they will scan it, and all of your, it will leave a data trail, and it will track every time your card is scanned. The government will have access to where you've been. So if you go, as I mentioned, any federal location, your card is scanned, the federal government now knows that you've entered that location. Every time you fly, of course, scanned, federal government knows. Anytime you travel, you're scanning your card, the federal government knows where you go. When you go to a bank and you have to open up an account, you scan your card, it's in your account. You go to a hospital, scan your card, it's now registered. This is, to many Alaskans and to many people in the United States, raises serious concerns over privacy. It is the beginning of a surveillance society, is the beginning of a society where the federal government is tracking your movements, and that's a real concern for people. I'll talk about something that was in the proposed rules, which is not in the final rule for Real ID, but is a concern that people have, and that's RFID, which is radio frequency identification. Essentially, they would put a chip in your license. Now, this is not in the final rule, but this was in the proposed rules. There's no reason to doubt that once this is implemented, Congress couldn't go back and simply do a one-line amendment in a massive budget bill in the future saying, well, guess what? Now your cards have to have RFID. RFID allows the federal government to really track where you're going. Even if they don't scan it, they can have scanners in any locations they choose, which will, when you walk by a scanner, it scans and it registers your location.
And on that point, Senator Wilikowski, I have a bill that I'm going to drop later, I think Friday, it'll be right across, on state law governing RFID chips generally. But it isn't even just the federal government. It's that you can buy these scanners now on the internet, and RFID chips are implanted in consumer credit cards and consumer cards such as your Safeway, Fred Meyer cards, and so forth. And any time you walk by or in the presence of someone that has that scanner, again, that can be purchased over the internet, it forecasts your social security number, your birth date, very sensitive information about you.
Which actually leads me to the next concern, which is the data that's included on your driver's license. Right now, there is a requirement that you have, of course, your height, your weight, your age, hair color, eye color, standard things. However, there's been discussions about including things on here, such as fingerprints. Your fingerprints when you go to DMV will be included, so now your fingerprints will be on your ID. Biometric data, retinal scans, DNA. Again, it's very easy to see where this goes. You have DNA now on this card, and as you mentioned, Madam Chair, every time you scan your card, all that information goes into a system which under the Real ID system requires, quote, the data requires that Alaska and every other state must share this with, quote, all other states. So what that means now is we have this database that we've created of every Alaskan citizen and of every American citizen, which is now being shared with every other state in the United States. Every DMV official in the United States now has access to every single Alaskan's data, personal identification information. Not only that, but private organizations, it is expected, will also be working with this information. There are some DMVs that privatize. There are organizations, private organizations that work on creating driver's licenses. So we'll have this data shared with DMVs throughout the nation and also private companies that work on this as well. There are also treaties with Canada and Mexico. And again, this is something that has not yet been decided, but the United States has transportation and travel treaties with Canada and Mexico. The federal government is still in the process of developing their rules on this aspect of it, but there's no reason to expect that when you go into Canada or when you go into Mexico and you swipe your ID, that the foreign nationals in those countries will have access to every American's private data. Now, as far as the cost goes, we don't know what the exact cost is. There was a deposition taken within the last year where DMV estimated it would cost the state about $10 million. I don't think anyone really knows what the cost is, because here are some of the requirements from Real ID. You have to keep paper copies of every document that comes in for 7 years. You have to keep electronic copies for 10 years. So obviously there's a cost, a storage cost there. It also requires that states, quote, ensure the physical security of locations where driver's licenses and ID cards are produced. No one really knows what that means, but when we enter federal buildings now, we see armed guards, we see federal police. So I don't see any reason why we can't expect the same here, which is an added cost that the state will have to pay. It also requires extensive changes to the hiring and retention practices for DMV employees. Now, in Alaska, we have kind of an unusual situation, because we have people who don't have DMVs that they can drive to or that they can easily get to. So what happens to people in the bush? Well, in order to get on an airplane, you need a real ID card. But let's say you just turn 16, you want to go into, and you live out in the bush, you want to hop on the plane and come to your local DMV station. How do you get on the plane if you don't have a driver's license and you can't get your driver's license? Because Real ID requires that you physically go to your DMV. And it also requires for renewal that you physically go to your DMV so that you can have your picture taken and so that you can present your documents. So there are serious logistical problems for getting people. We have to fly. And in order to get on a plane, you need your Real ID. And you can't get to the DMV unless you fly. So there are serious logistical problems here in Alaska with that. There's been a lot of concern that this is a first step towards a national gun registry. There's an organization, the Gun Owners of America, who have opposed this. I know many NRA members oppose this. And if people think that's a little bit crazy, here's how it can happen very easily. When you go to Fred Meyer or Walmart or wherever to purchase your gun, you have to fill out a form, 4473. You have to show your ID. You show your federally mandated national identification card, and it's now swiped. And guess what? The federal government and the state now knows that you've just purchased a gun. Also, you go in to buy ammo, same thing. Federal government swipes your card, and you are now on record as having purchased a gun. I know this concerns a lot of people in Alaska. And the Department of Homeland Security, remember, decides has the power to decide any other purpose for which Real ID shall be used. Is it really a stretch of imagination that we have a Secretary of Homeland Security in future years who will say, due to security concerns, we need to know, we need to now swipe your IDs for guns? I don't think that's any stretch at all. This does nothing to secure our borders. Currently in Alaska, it is illegal for illegal immigrants to get driver's license in Alaska. They can't get it. Now, this Real ID has a number of organizations that oppose it. I'll give you just a few because it's a real interesting list. Of course, in Anchorage, we've got the Anchorage Daily News and the Voice of the Times have come out and opposed this. Many presidential candidates have opposed this. I'll just read you a few. American Bar Association, American Civil Liberties Union, American Conservative Union, Catholic Social Services of Alaska, Citizens Against Government Waste, the John Birch Society, National Center on Domestic and Sexual Violence, National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, National Taxpayers Union, People for the American Way, Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. There are about 600, at least, organizations that have come out in opposition to this. There are 18 states that have passed legislation opposing Real ID. There are 18 more that are currently reviewing legislation with us. It's 19 more to oppose Real ID. There are also religious groups, and I'm not going to get...
Senator Wilikowski, if you want to just close it in here.
I will. There are also religious groups, and I won't get into the detail, but there are many, many religious groups which oppose Real ID for their own religious reasons. I would ask that this committee take a serious look at this and stand up for Alaska's sovereignty. This is giving away our privacy rights. This is giving away our freedoms and liberties. And I ask that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Wilikowski. Questions for the bill's sponsor? Senator Bundy. That's great.
I'm tempted to ask if these ID cards would be delivered by black helicopters, but it seems as if there's some serious questions about federal legislation, but that ought to be addressed at the federal level. What you're suggesting is that we try to block the implementation of a federal mandate, and by doing so, wouldn't we then prevent our citizens from being able to get on an airplane or do many of the other things you listed?
Yes, we would. And you know, I guess there are times when we represent the people of Alaska. And this is an encroachment on the privacy rights, the liberty rights of the people of Alaska. And I don't think we should stand for the federal government taking away those rights, Senator.
Well, Senator Bundy. Reasonable people can probably disagree. I don't think we ought to have
people who we're not sure who they are getting on our airplanes either. And it's a rite of passage for young people to get phony IDs. As I understand, you can go to a street corner in L.A. and get a full identity kit for a couple hundred bucks. You might have some questions about this one, but what are we going to do about the other problem that we have people who can have assumed identities, maybe with ill intent for our country?
Well, and I guess if you look, and this does absolutely nothing to make our country safer. If the federal government is concerned about illegal immigrants getting into our country, they need to work on securing the borders. This does nothing to secure our borders. This is making the state of Alaska and DMV workers, this is commandeering them by the federal government to use them as federal employees. And they're not paying for it. All we're saying with this legislation is if the federal government wishes to create a surveillance society, wishes to create a society that really is Big Brother, we don't want to pay for it. They can go ahead and do it. We just don't want to pay for it. That's all this bill does.
Senator Thank Bundy.
And I would note that perhaps there is some hyperbole in the response.
I think, the reason I brought it up, as the chair, I have a philosophical viewpoint that that is more closely aligned with the bill's sponsor. What I was concerned about is that in the hearing on Senator Huggins' bill 2 weeks ago, the testimony kept coming back to Real ID over and over again. And in conversations with the bill's sponsor, I understand his bill is not about Real ID. It's about making our driver's license and identification cards more secure. And so the thought was, let's go ahead and bring the issue out that everyone's talking about and address it head on. And we're not alone. Many other states are doing this. And I would, say that it's the opposite of what we did with the Patriot Act, which was, it sailed through. There are tremendous concerns about it. Now states are looking at this and saying, what a revelation in terms of, monitoring people's internet use at our libraries. But we didn't say anything. We didn't do it. And so this is one way of saying, sometimes the states can. You're right, Senator Bundy, we don't have the power if they mandate it. But sometimes states can send messages that there are concerns. And what my hope would be is that the federal government, as it considers this program, is that it does take into account the very serious, very real privacy concerns that that state legislatures have. So I think it's an appropriate, and I think it's the kind of bill that if it does pass should be sent to the appropriate people with, even a letter from the legislature. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two points I want to make. First is I appreciate the bill sponsor bringing it to us. I think we're probably all in agreement. If the federal government really wants to have a federal ID card for federal purposes, then it should create the bureaucracy, create the database, create the cards, and issue them, and create little federal, ID centers all across the land and assume the responsibility for that and make it happen on their own without sort of forcing it through our state offices. So I think it's a good idea to sort of put the responsibility where it lies. If that's a mandate that the federal government's going to assume, fair enough. But, that's your problem and your headache and your bureaucratic sort of enterprise to engage in. But it does sort of bring up the difficulty of a bill like this is, and I think I appreciate you're giving us some latitude to discuss other pieces of legislation. Senator Huggins' bill, is only arguably, I think, part of a Real ID effort. I think you could argue it either way. And so what does the Commissioner of Public Safety do should Senator Huggins' bill become law with that fiscal note? And I think it creates, at least some difficulty in implementing a policy choice that I agree with. I mean, I totally agree that we should not be bearing this cost, but at some point, the Commissioner of Public Safety and the Commissioner of Administration is going to have to make a call as to whether or not this does or does not comply with the Real ID Act and then authorize the expenditure of state funds. So I agree with the policy direction we're taking, but I don't think it makes the path easy. It just puts decisions in the hands of state officials.
Well, and maybe what it does is it makes the dialogue continue in a much more overt way. There are a lot of things, a lot of moving parts when we're here, and perhaps, if Real ID does come to fruition, we would obviously have the commissioner before us or before the Finance Committee discussing the merits of spending those monies and the implementation. So maybe more than anything, it forces the dialogue. Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just the comment that this is totally in keeping with, I think, where other states are going, the National Conference of State Legislatures and the CSG, the Council on State Government, have both taken very strong positions, I think almost unanimously, that that if the federal government is going to implement such a program, they need to fund it, not the states. So I appreciate the prohibition of using state money.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, I do have some folks to testify, and I'm going to ask them if they could to try to keep it to 3 minutes. The first person I have is Matthew Kerr. Kerr. I'm going to go ahead. We've seen you before, but if you want to put your name on the record.
Yeah. My name is Matthew Kerr, K-E-R-R, and I'm here representing myself today. I was here 2 weeks ago testifying against against Senator Huggins' potentially related bill. I would like to say that I support this bill. I agree that the issues of legal presence and the real ID are separate, although in some cases related, as a legal presence being one part of it, which is a subject to be addressed in more in the other bill, perhaps. I guess I would like to say that I believe that the primary purpose of driver's licensing is to protect public safety more than as a form of identification, although some people may disagree. I believe that is the primary purpose, although identification is obviously a secondary one. Last year when these bills were introduced, I did a little interesting experiment, and I actually did not use my Alaska ID or driver's license for the most of the legislative session last time. And I have to say that it really wasn't all that difficult. And I would even be willing to say that I was able to fly from Juneau to Anchorage without any ID whatsoever, although obviously the airline might have some different beliefs on or different. They might say certain things and do things differently. I won't get into that. But the Real ID has been rejected by many states, and if we all go along with it, then it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I support the state's efforts to oppose it. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Matt. Questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony and for coming all the way to Juneau twice. Next, I have James Harrison. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is James Harrison. I'm an Alaska attorney, and I've been involved in Real ID for quite some time. There's just two brief points that I want to make here. One is to make the committee aware of the timeline having to do with Real ID. Real ID requires by 2014 that the states have in the hands of all of their driver's licenses, all of their drivers, Real ID compliant driver's licenses. And it's my understanding that it's a 5-year process of renewal where you start and people have to renew their driver's license. Within 5 years, you have everybody with it, which means that to be Real ID compliant by 2014, the state of Alaska would have to be issuing Real ID compliant driver's licenses by the end of 2009. That's next year. And to be able to issue those Real ID compliant driver's licenses, they're going to have to build the infrastructure and the resources and start doing the background checks and start doing the all the sorts of things that they have to do to comply with Real ID now. And they're going to have to start spending the money now. So this isn't really something that's off in the future. It is something that's right here and right now. So it's, even though the state has taken an extension of time to comply with Real ID, it doesn't mean that they can just sit back and do nothing. So this is something that deserves your immediate attention, even though an extension has been taken. The other thing that I want to talk about briefly is the argument that the DMV has that, well, we were going to do some of these things that Real ID requires anyway. And if you say we don't have any funds for Real ID, how are you going to differentiate what is and what isn't our ID, our idea, and what is Real ID's idea? I draw your attention to the back of the Real ID rules, where there's Appendix A, It has a material compliance checklist with Real ID, and it has a whole number of this is part of the Federal Register. This is 18 points that they have to comply with. And if DMV comes to you with that argument of, well, we were going to do it anyway, I ask you to take a hard look at this list and ask them to go over it with you directly. My final note is Real ID isn't about illegal immigrants. It's not about the guy that's trying to stay here beyond his time. It's about you, and it's about your children that are going to have to go in and prove your citizenship to get your driver's license and take your driver's license and hand it over to the federal government as a precondition for the free exercise of your rights. This is a prior restraint on your rights. This is a something that has a real danger of mission creep, as Senator Wilikowski pointed out, and it's fundamentally anti-American. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harrison. Questions? Senator Stevens.
Sir. Madam Chair, could you leave us a copy of that list through the chair so we could, maybe we have it. Thank you.
Thank you.
That'd be great, yes. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. And the committee aide is making copies of Washington State's resolution, similar to Senator Wilikowski's, as well as the Senator Stevens, our Senator Stevens on the federal level, has sponsored a resolution repealing Real ID, and she's
our
making
Senator
that.
Stevens?
Yes.
What are we,
well, the other Senator Stevens. My apologies. Kevin Brooks is here to answer questions. Questions for Kevin Brooks? Oh, you'd like to offer testimony now? Okay, Mr. Brooks. Welcome to Senate State Affairs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Kevin Brooks. I am the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration, and Division of Motor Vehicles is one of our programs. I believe also Whitney Brewster, our director, is online as well. I wanted to just share with the committee a couple of things that the state is doing, and you've heard it at least alluded to in previous testimony. But this week, the state did file for an extension to the Real ID rules and received preliminary approval of that through December of 2009. We just got the rules. It's about a 200-page document last month, and we're working through those. I've met with the bill sponsor, and we've talked about some of the things contemplated or that would result from the bill in its current form. And I just want to go on record, too, to say the administration is very concerned about the privacy issues that are raised, the security of data. I mean, it's something we're looking at as we discuss HB 65 and security breaches. I mean, it's a big deal for Alaskans every day, and it's something the state is working on actively. But one of the concerns we do have with the bill is that currently the state is complying with many aspects of Real ID. There make sense business practices. It's a digital photo on your driver's license. And so what I would urge the committee to consider as you continue the debate on Real ID, and there's a lot to discuss, is that we not restrict the Departments of Public Safety or the Department of Administration on things that make sense. Like we train our employees to detect fraudulent documents and things of that nature. And so I think the public debate on how we secure our data and what we do with Real ID generally needs to occur, but it shouldn't be at the expense of good business practices that are currently in place and that makes sense for Alaska to do. And Senator Bundy alluded to it earlier as well. We don't want to do something that would restrict the free movement of our citizens getting on an airplane. So we need to be cognizant of that, taking a firm stand on our individual rights and our state rights, but also not restricting free movement of our citizens. So we're here to help work with the committee and other members that are interested on the topic.
Great. Well said. So to that end, Mr. Brooks, are there suggestions that you would have to the language in Senate Bill 202?
Well, we just met, Madam Chair, yesterday with Senator Wilikowski and talked to him about providing the types of things that we do now
Okay.
That comply, that our business practices that the division employs, and then other things that would be required. We currently have a budget for the operations of the DMV and the many field offices that we have around the state. It's about a $13 million annual budget. That budget would not allow us to implement Real ID. So any funding, we would have to come back here or get federal funds, but the legislature would see it in finance committees and budget subcommittees if there was any kind of real movement towards compliance beyond what we're already doing, because it's going to take additional funds to do that. And that obviously will spur the debate even further on whether we're going to spend state funds or apply for federal funds or something of that nature.
Okay, it strikes me, just looking at the language, that it's fairly clear that it's really just those funds that would be used to aid, implement, or assist in the implementation of the Federal Real ID Act of 2005. So it's fairly specific. It's the Real ID Act itself. I don't think, and I ask other committee members, I don't think it would exclude good business practices that are being implemented. For example, under Dwayne Bannock's lead, we did go to the digital licenses, and that was a move that folks supported. I don't see how that would be covered.
Through the chair, or I'm sorry, you are the chair, but Madam Chair. And I don't know that it would either. I just want to say that okay. The fact that we're doing digital driver's license, that digital photo on a license now, that's one of the things that you'll see on the checklist. And so we don't want to be put in a position where we would stop doing that, because it's a smart thing to do. The fact that we've gone away from that Polaroid that was under a laminated card is, you know, those were easy to
replicate, you know, yeah,
inappropriately. So we just don't want anything that we're doing to be prohibited, I guess, under passage of legislation. I think we could work and find language that would address that concern, and we've pledged to do that with the sponsor.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. December 2009 is the extension. What is it we have to do at that point, at that time? Which is only, a year and 10 months away?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, what we've done in our request, and I think a tack that most states are taking, is our request for an extension, we specifically stated that does not imply that we intend to comply with the act. Just gives us time to get through the rules and come back. I would think by next session we'd be able to come back to you after an exhaustive review of the rules and say, what would it mean to Alaska if we did have to comply? Setting aside the argument whether we should or not, we're in the unenviable position that we have rules out there that a lot of people are worked up about and concerned about, but we have to continue to exercise good business practices at the DMV and not necessarily work towards compliance, but be aware that this December 2009 date is looming, and what would it take for us to comply. But I think we can more actively engage that discussion the next time you're down here meeting, and we'll be spending the interim, you know, working the issue.
I think what I'd like to do is we'll continue testimony, but I'd like to have this up soon as its own full day in state affairs to listen to what the department is doing, to hear a little bit more about it, and then we can have some examples of other states and what they have done to specifically address what you're discussing and how to carve out those funds. So why don't we go ahead and continue on with the folks that are here to publicly testify, and we'll bring this back up again.
And Madam Chair, I think Whitney Brewster, our director, is online. I don't know if she had anything to add to the discussion that we've
Whitney
had.
Brewster, Whitney, are you there? Do you have anything to add to Mr. Brooks' testimony?
Not at this time.
Okay. All right, and so next I have Bill Scannell. Hope I get that right. Is that right? Bill, are you there?
That's correct. It's Bill Scannell from Anchorage, Alaska. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Good morning.
Excellent. Good morning, and greetings from Honolulu, Hawaii, on the last day of my family's winter vacation. But I heard that Real ID was to be discussed today, and I I've been following this issue and working on it on a nationwide basis, opposing Real ID, and I applaud Senator Wilikowski's bill. What I won't applaud is what I just heard from a state employee, Mr. Brooks, from the Department of Administration. He's essentially saying that we should all be good Germans and follow along, that they've sent in this letter requesting an extension. I've read the letter. There's nothing in there that says that we may or may not comply. In fact, it reads to me like we have every intention of complying, and that somehow that we as Alaskans aren't willing to be a little inconvenienced in order to take a stand. I've heard so many times people talk about freedom not being free, and if we as Alaskans aren't willing to put up with a little bit of inconvenience, we can still fly. We may have to go through secondary screening. We can still travel. And I can't imagine Michael Chertoff keeping us out of courthouses. What are we as a people? Who are we if we're not willing to put up with a little bit of minor inconvenience to stand up for our rights and freedoms? Then we're nothing but good Germans, and we frankly don't have the right to look at our ancestors in the eyes and call ourselves Americans. The Real ID Bill and the Real ID Act is an abomination. It turns our state driver's licenses and our state's rights into a national ID card. I deeply oppose it and strongly suggest that you pass Senator Wilikowski's anti-Real ID bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Krista Stearns.
Okay. Madam Chair, I am just here to observe and be on hand for my clients at the DMV if they had any questions. I don't have any testimony to present.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, in Delta Junction, Mary Gervon.
I've changed my mind. I thought you were going to be about NAIS. But I do endorse Senator's Bill 202.
Okay, thank you. Patrick Dalton.
Thank you. I'll start with where this bill started. My name is Patrick Dalton, and I appreciate you honoring me with the ability to speak. I hope we still have freedom of speech. The Real ID Act started, I believe, in the United Nations, and I'll quote the following quote from CNET 102605 by Declan McCullough. Quote, but the Bush administration chose to go ahead with embedding 64 kilobyte chips in future passports, acting a desire to abide by globally interoperable standards devised by the International Civil Aviation Organization, a United Nations agency. Other nations, including the UK and Germany, have announced similar plans. End of quote. So the Real ID Act started with the United Nations. The Bush administration implemented it, and there was very little hearing, as Senator Wilichowski had pointed out. There was no Senate debate. The public still doesn't know about it. And furthermore, it'll be costly for the state of Alaska and all these other states. And I really appreciate Senator Wilichowski writing this bill, and I support it. And I think that Alaskans need to still be free to travel without unreasonable encumbrances. That's what it all gets down to. If we're all stopped and checked for IDs all the time, we're no longer a free citizen in the United States here. And I think it'd be better to tighten up the borders and things like that. Our identification system and our current driver's license seem to work just fine right now. So if the problem isn't broken, don't fix it. I mean, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And as far as receiving implementation of a global identification system, which is what this is, that'll be machine readable throughout Europe, America, Britain. I don't think we need to play a part of that. The United States is a sovereign country, and we need to remain that way. And then one last quote is from Representative Jim Guest of Missouri, United States House of Representatives. He claims that the Real ID Act gives us a false sense of security. And furthermore, he quotes, we don't know the authenticity of the documents presented in order to get the ID anyway. So So a fancy idea is not going to be any better than the documents that people submit.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And for the folks coming up, if you could keep it to 3 minutes, I would appreciate it. We're getting close to the bewitching hour here in Senate State Affairs. Timothy Peters?
Yes, my name is Timothy Peters, and I am a paralegal in Anchorage, Alaska. And I just want to say simply that I oppose the Real ID Act. I view it as a violation of basic civil liberties and the U.S. Constitution. The 10th Amendment in the Bill of Rights prohibits the federal government from telling the states what they can and cannot do when it comes to identification cards, and it also violates the Alaska Constitution with the Right to Privacy Clause. So I am against the Real ID Act, and I support Senate Bill 202.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Irvin Baxter?
Yes, Irvin Baxter here. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Madam Speaker. I appreciate it very much. I'm speaking from a religious standpoint. There is a prophecy in the Bible that a time will come in society when every person will be required to have a number without which they will be unable to buy or sell. It's going to be the ultimate form of control if you don't comply to the edict passed down by the powers that be. We will control you by putting you off limits in the economy. In the immigration bill that was defeated, thankfully, Homeland Security put a section in, Section 707, Parts A, B, and C, that was entitled Social Security Card-Based Employment Eligibility Verification. Many people are pushing right now that every person will have to have a real ID card in order to prove that they are eligible for employment in America. Every employee will have to have a card reader. The card will be scanned to the reader, and also the Real ID Act requires that all states link their databases to the databases of the other 49 states, thus creating a national database. Now, Homeland Security has denied that they intend to have a national database, but Section B reads like this: the creation of a unified database to be maintained by the Department of Homeland Security and comprised of data from the Social Security Administration and the Department of Homeland Security. So they fully intend to have a national database, which they will have through the Real ID Act, and you will have to be in that database or you won't be able to hold a job. If you can't hold a job, you can't make money, you can't buy or sell. This is getting way too close to home as we are in this time of setting up a global government. Also concurring with the previous speaker, this is not a local situation. This is a national ID, which we have been without for 230 years. We've not needed it for 230 years. It will not stop anyone from committing terrorist acts because everybody can get a hold of an ID of one form or another. The perpetrators of 911 all could have qualified for this national ID card. They had passports from their countries. It would have stopped none of them. All this does is end freedom in America. It's the worst thing we could possibly do, and I very much favor Bill 202.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm told you have a talk show in which you'll be talking about this this piece of legislation.
Yeah, we have a national talk show. It's called, of all things, Politics and Religion, the two things you're not supposed to talk about.
Wonderful.
But we talk about the fulfillment of the prophecies of the Bible and how they're happening right now.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to call in here today.
Well, thank you.
Okay, I am going to go to one last person, and my apologies to the folks still online. We will bring the bill back up next week. Should we say Tuesday? Tuesday? Okay, so Tuesday of next week, we will bring it back up. We will have folks from the DMV, and we'll talk about this broader. So my apologies. I mean no disrespect to any of you that are still online. Please call back in, and if you'd like to send us any of your testimony via email or fax, that would be fine. So the last person I'm going to go to is Jeffrey Mittman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the incoming executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. I thank the chair for the opportunity to testify. I'd also like to thank Senator Wilikowski for sponsoring this important bill. We do fully support the bill and would like to concur with his comments. Just to expand very briefly and make a few additional notes, As the chair noted, the state of Washington has already opted out of Real ID, barring the federal government ensuring that their privacy protections and fully funded, as has also the state of Georgia. In addition, there are five states, Montana, Oklahoma, Maine, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, who have absolutely opted out of Real ID. So in terms of the idea that this Real ID program can somehow protect us and provide greater security, it's already failed and that there's been a refusal of state to participate. In addition, I'd like to go briefly to the final regulations that were issued by the Department of Homeland Security on January 11, 2008. As the sponsor noted, the initial bill passage was not democratic. Furthermore, the devil's in the details. The regulations themselves were not done in the normal manner. Many of the organizations who are interested and have a stake in the regulations, their comments were essentially ignored, and the final regulations failed to truly implement an actual program that is workable and that would provide any real security. As far as funding, the Department of Homeland Security initially noted that they estimated the program would cost $23 billion. They've now, through sort of mathematical magic, lowered that to $9.9 billion, but still, the federal government has only allocated $90 million, so we're only at 1% of the cost to implement the program. Commenting on some of the, as noted by the chair, the issue of RFID and the use of these Real ID compliant licenses, businesses and non-governmental entities would have the ability to access this information. And again, unfortunately, in the final regulations, the Department of Homeland Security has refused to require that this information be encrypted. So it's essentially creating a large target of opportunity for identity thieves. This will end up making us less secure, not more secure. Let's assume that Alaska does everything perfectly to implement Real ID and that we have full and robust security protections. Any single state who fails to provide those protections puts at risk the information of all Alaskans. In closing, I'd like to note, as the sponsor had noted, there are a wide range of organizations who've really come out against this bill. The Association of Computing Machinery issued a statement on January 15th, and they noted, "The system as proposed does not sufficiently define effective privacy and security plans for adequately protecting this trove of private information. They believe it provides greater incentives, not less, but greater incentives to obtain fraudulent IDs." I would also note that the National Congress of American Indians, who represents American Indians and Alaska Natives, has really commented that these regulations are problematic. They believe it will impact tribal sovereignty and the rights of Native Alaskans. In closing, further, I would refer the senators to www.realnightmare.org. It has a good bit of information that the sponsor has already noted that really outline the problems with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, so we'll set Senate Bill 202 aside for next Tuesday. Thank you to the folks that testified, and for those that did not get a chance, we'll get to you, and I appreciate your patience. So next, we have Senate Bill 215, Senator Huggins. We set the bill aside last week, and there are some folks online to answer questions. Public testimony was already offered and closed, but there are people available for questions. Does the committee have further questions on Senate Bill 215 or discussion? Yes.
Yeah, I move Senate Bill 215 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay, is there an objection to that motion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 215 has moved. Thank you, Senator Huggins. And with that, Senate State Affairs is adjourned.
Hey, Bill.